I want to pray. Okay, let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for this day that we have. Thank you that each one is here. Lord, you know the issues and opinions that we have. That's all part of being us. And what we want to pray at this moment and for this class is that we would remember together that Jesus is Lord of heaven and of earth, and that our discussion would come under that umbrella. Also, Lord, that we have neighbors. Some are far away and some are near. Help us to love our neighbor as ourselves. And may this class be an aid in that prayer. We pray in the name of Jesus. Amen. Okay. History is a serious subject in many ways. And the reason I'm kind of approaching this with a little bit of trepidation is that when you're looking at history in general, you can very easily slide over into the present. Now, that's not accidental. That should actually happen. We should think about the present. But people get very, very keyed up about history when it starts influencing politics. And no few people on earth are more passionate about politics than Americans, right? And we might be Mennonites, but many of us are Americans too. Okay, so like I said, I got a bit of trepidation, but we want to be honest, avoid triteness, if I can put it that way, and at the same time think about how a study of history can make us a little bit wiser. Now, my goal right at the moment is not to go too fast. The idea of these tracks are that you can take time to develop an idea and keep working with it. So I'm very aware of the fact that we're just so not nearly going to cover much in this whole thing. So I do have some objectives, and one of them is to give a bit of a skeleton so that you can hang on to that. That these are basic things that people know or talk about, and then I want to have some interactive elements to the class that we can go back and forth, and maybe something can grow from this. Personally, I'm a little bit surprised that there are as many of you as you are. I think, you know, many people think of history as is just quite, I don't know, boring or whatever, but I congratulate you on being strong enough to come and working with it. Okay, introduction to history. I'll give just a little bit of information about myself. I am I'm a teacher by career. I love history. I'm passionate about history, and I have been for about as long as I can remember, really, from my very early childhood. I love stories about Romans and Greeks and things like that, and realize before too long that not everybody does. But I did. I have some friends, some close friends, who are professional historians, and so they have helped give me some discipline in my own life as far as how to focus on certain things. I have some academic work that I've been trying to work on for a long time. I've studied Roman history for years, mostly through the lens of the world in which Christianity first developed. So when Jonathan asked me to speak about the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, I was like, well, it's, you know, something that I'm fairly familiar with, but I'm also aware it's a very big subject, and I think we'll get that sense after a bit. So that we're actually going to be looking at the empire more than at, let's say, a history of early Christianity and that kind of thing, but we will also use that as a foil to go along. Maybe I should give just a few objectives that I have. By the end of this class, I would like to be able to contrast and compare our world with that of the Roman world. I would love it if you would be able to know some things that if someone says, well, what are some of the ways that Rome impacted
Western society, and institutionally speaking, there is no greater impact than Rome on Western history as a whole. What are some of those things that are still living with us today? What kind of influence did it have? To be able to give a simplified presentation about a picture of what we mean when we're talking about Roman history, that would be good. Here are some discussion questions that I've thought. What are some reasons that the Roman Empire is often called great? Rome inspires people. It still inspires people. It inspired many people in the past, and it was considered great, in a sense. Why did it give that impression? What made it so durable? It has had an enduring influence, but what made that influence so influential? What made the Roman Empire work cohesively or function? Here's a really big question that is not asked really often, but should be. What did it mean to be a normal person within the Roman Empire? All of us, we read history, and history is written by the winners. This is kind of a normal thing, all right? You know, it's their perspective that wins. That's part of being the winner, okay? but there's a huge majority underneath that of nameless people. Sometimes I give this idea to my students. I say, let's talk about who's somebody you would like to meet and visit with that's mentioned in the Bible but is not named. Well, there are actually lots of them that we start thinking with, and because they're young people, you know, the little maid who talked about, told Naaman about the prophets, things like that. But there are many, many stories about that, and so there are many, many, many building blocks within the Roman period, and most of them are from below. Now, history is written from above, especially Roman history, and intentionally so, and with a reason. Today we have what we call social history, and many other ways, and in some ways that's a good corrective, in other ways it might be swinging a little bit almost too far. That's a different subject. What did it mean to be a normal person within the Roman Empire? I also want to use, how can we study the Roman Empire and cultivate a Christian worldview? I'll give a story that ties these two together. I had three children from a quite troubled home in my class for a number of years, and they were the parents were divorced, and big issues. All right, these boys had a difficult time memorizing stuff, learning things unless they were interested in it. Big surprise. Well, what were they interested in? They were interested in weapons, and it was just a shock to me how guys who over half an hour study could just barely memorize, you know, a verse or two verses or something, you know, like the weaponry numbers that they could roll out and where they were manufactured and by whom and what army uses them and what the special forces of those specific military groups, and strong opinions about which one's the best and all that and the other thing. And I entered into that discussion fairly neutrally, with some reservation as well. And one time I did give this story about, it was in Afghanistan, and an American warplane was going after someone with the Taliban or something like that. And it was not a fighter. They were going to drop a bomb. Well, this girl who was actually in the bomber bay, she said she did some calculus to figure out where to drop it, because you all know this math thing, a bomb doesn't go straight down, not when it's traveling in a plane. Okay, so how fast does the plane need to go in order to drop it where that truck is going to be once it gets there? You know, so she worked this out. All right, I said, the thing I took away from that story is, she said, well, she figured that the truck was driving 100 miles an hour. And then she made this comment. How fast would you go if you had a plane coming after you that wanted to drop a bomb on top of you? And so I made this comment. You know what? We often think about from the perspective of the one dropping the bomb. I think about the people in that truck, or what it's like to be chased by something like that, and it's terrifying. You know, think about that. Think about it. These are people that are here. And so one of the boys especially had this great the idea to be a sniper. And it's a completely different perspective when you're the one that the sniper is going after. All right? Oh, no, he said. No, no. I don't want to be shot at. I want to do the shooting. Well, honesty was good. I commended him on that. But this gives the idea of the perspective that we come to history with. We come to it from the from who we are and also who we think we are and also from the perspective of the winners. I want to think about, at least some, what was it like to be a normal person within the Roman world? What was it like to be a Christian in the Roman world? What was it like to be a barbarian from a Roman perspective? A lot of us have Germanic background. There's nobody more barbaric than that. Okay. We think about those things. Let's put this in perspective about history. And I don't know if this is quite going to work very well, but we'll just see what we can do. History is normally divided into three voices. I should have had this written up and I'm practicing now. Three great periods. Ancient, you want to help me? Medieval. Whoops. And modern. I'm gonna run into trouble right very quickly here, so we'll use a lot of erasing. Okay. Today, sometimes people say that we're living in the post-modern world. These things, these dates, can kind of go, let's say, from creation to roughly 1500. Sorry, that's wrong. No, I'm going to change that, sorry. 476 or 500, that's considered sort of the fall of Rome. Medieval, then, goes more or less from the fall of Rome, or 500, to roughly 1500. And then again, your 1453 date, the fall of Constantinople, that's all part of that. And then forward from there. There are now many distinct lines. Nobody went to sleep one day in the ancient period and woke up in the medieval period. Understand that. It was all very blurred. So this kind of period they now start calling late antiquity, often, or maybe not quite that far into the Middle Ages. The Middle Ages are often broken up into the early Middle Ages, the high Middle Ages, and the late Middle Ages, by which time you're aiming at something like Reformation studies and things like that. Other people, you will break it up into an age of revolution and things which would normally begin with the French Revolution, which I always, as an American, thought was funny. Why did they start with the French Revolution? Why not the American Revolution? There's actually a reason, but we're not going to go there. Right now. And then again, this is also a very blurred time. Rome. Let's talk about some solid dates on Rome. Rome essentially goes back into the ancient period quite a ways. And sure, if we want our continuum of dates, does anybody know what a continuum is? I just learned recently. My son is starting to read history and mythology and some heavy books, and he says, "Daddy, you know what a continuum is?" And I'm like, "I have an idea. Let's talk. I love words." So it was a little bit of a new word for me, but it works well in the study of history. A continuum is when there is a series of interrelated changes that do not break with each other, but they go from one thing to something very different at the other end. So, for example, in literary writing, you can say there's a continuum from fantasy to history. So from one to the other, to the other, to the other, without necessarily breaking from the link that was before it. So the continuum of Roman history, we could say, is 753 BC to 1453, let's put in the right dates here, AD, with a very big kind of shift in the middle. And again, I think, if I'm remembering right, we'll look at our chronology here a little bit, 476, that is when the last king of Rome was placed aside
and the Roman Empire in the West effectively ended.
Okay, so that gives you just a little bit of feeling. Those are long periods between them. Huge amounts of things happening there, and a long time. So now, let me pass out some papers. Do not feel obligated to take them. And I don't know if I have enough. So you will, yeah, that'd be great. Let me explain just a little bit here. There are two pages. I entitled it A Greatly Simplified Roman Chronology. History, like it or not, is built on chronology. Things don't happen, well, they happen in the way that they happened. Now, you can study motifs, you can study different ways of overlapping stuff and go back and forth, but eventually, when did it happen, that's pretty crucial. And so what I have is two pages, and I have them punched this way on purpose so that if you have a binder, you can open them up and look at the whole thing. But if you want to staple them, then go ahead. I'll pass the stapler around. The left-hand column is specific events in Roman history, and then to give a little bit of a sense of some other stuff, I have a right-hand column that over roughly that time, these are some other things that were happening throughout the world, especially in connection to Jewish history, Old Testament history, and even some New Testament, and then in the Christian experience, and that will help connect our things. So if you want to pass, you want to pass them both, or do you want someone to pass one and one to pass another? You can volunteer her, she, or him. Okay. Okay. Those are some things to think about. 753 BC to 1453. 753, incidentally, was a. Let me say something about dates that I just learned, and this is an interesting teaching tip. How many of you are familiar with the Great Courses? They're called Great Courses, or by the Teaching Company, or something like that. There is one called The Art of Teaching. I'm listening to it right now by a historian that I enjoy him immensely. His name is Patrick Allett. My daughter, well, forget that. Allett, A-L-L-I-T, I think. He made this comment. He's a historian. He said, so as teachers, you will run up into things against things that students don't like. They're bored with them, or they don't like it, or whatever. And there are several ways to work with them, but one of them is to really, really focus positively on them. All right? And he said, for example, one of the things as a historian that people don't like are dates. You know, they like the stories, but they don't like all those dates. And so when I write a date up on the board, I like to say, look at that date. It's a beautiful date. Doesn't it look like a nice date? There's something so 753-ish about that date. And he says students start to trigger that. And this is funny to me because it's what I've done for years with diagramming. I think diagramming is beautiful. And I tell people this. Look at this way you can take this sentence apart. And it just, there are all these beautiful pieces and there's beautiful words with it. And I actually do mean it. They can actually have some heavy-duty scowls along the line. Okay, this has gotten to you. 753, the Romans, one way that they revolutionized the world is that they kept track of things. And they kept fairly good track. Now, their memories weren't perfect, and there were people that were writing that our records, if they come down to us, are centuries removed. And yet, by comparing them, historians are able to pretty much stack things up and find this stuff. So whether the city of Rome was established in 753 BC exactly or not is not something we're able to answer. What we do know is that the Romans believed that it was. Okay? And so they went off that. They obviously didn't call it 753 BC either, but anyhow, they gave it by the years of their consuls. Now, your turn a little bit. Roman history is inspiring. People have been inspired by Roman history. Give me some things quickly that you think about when you think about the history of the Roman Empire.
Roads.
Yes. So, no, it's a big, I'm just getting a picture. We think about Roman roads. This is really bad. I love boards, and then they get pretty chaotic, but let's go here. Roads.
They're military.
Okay.
Right.
They're military. The Roman people think about war, their soldiers, their situation. Definitely.
Julius Caesar.
It's about a person. I'm hoping that, well.
Common language.
Can you tell me what the language was? Latin, that's the language of the Romans. However, they also used another one, Greek. So those were the two great languages of the ancient world.
Still studied in universities in Romania.
Not just in Romania, brother.
I don't know about Romania.
Roman law is huge, and it's been hugely influential.
It's a full year.
I can't talk too much about it. I love bunny trails, guys. But I'm trying to really stay focused here for a little bit. Okay. The Senate. What do you think about when you think about the Senate? Like, what was the Senate?
Governor. Brutus. Yeah. I just said Brutus and company. What do you think about the Senate?
Brutus stabbing Caesar. All right, no. Senate. I should be able to tell you where the word comes from, but I can't right now. But the word Senate has been hugely influential in lawmaking bodies all over Western society, even some non-Western.
There's also the Romans were inventors. They invented the first odometer.
Odometer, okay, yeah. So, inventions.
Art and architecture. Mm-hmm. Go together.
I'm just going to put art, but architecture goes with that. And the things that they built. I have a book here somewhere.
Maybe we could have a separate chapter called engineering.
There would be. Actually, books are written about that subject. It's fascinating.
It is in our part of the world.
Gladiators, half of which were glad.
I know I'm not the only one in this room that loves words, but I also know that Brother Howard does too. I'll give you one thing that he connects words, but he's the only person in public that I've ever seen add two letters to a word and make it shorter. Okay, something else. We're back to Rome, guys.
Persecution.
Hey, persecution, which would have offended the Romans.
What?
Because, boy, I'm trying to do two things at once, and it's not a good deal. The Romans considered themselves the most tolerant of people. And in many ancient ways, they were. So we think of it from a Christian perspective, right? They thought, well, we're tolerant, and you know, occasionally people need to be kept in their place. But we'll talk about that. Whoops. Okay. Are we done? This kind of sums up our thoughts, our immediate thoughts in Rome.
This might not be what you're thinking, but they created concepts of a union between the church and state that is still lasting today.
We'll get to that.
Oh, yeah.
That's huge.
So well.
The establishment of what some academics at least call Christendom, mm-hmm. Happened under the influence of the Roman Empire.
Medicine and philosophy, there were two broad chapters on the Roman.
Okay, so medicine and philosophy, and often when we talk about the Roman Empire, we should get this down as well. We start talking about the Roman world, and the Roman world is also called the Greco-Roman world. And by the way, Greco can be spelled more than once, so don't get too hard on me there. The Greco-Roman world, so when you think, for example, of medicine and philosophy, the Greeks really led in that. I've actually been reading a lot lately. I'm trying to read their original stuff, yeah, but this is whatever. And I got, how many of you know who Livy was? Okay, so Livy is someone I've known about for a long time, but I thought, I'm supposed to be giving this talk. I better read Livy, all right? Well, first of all, I have to find the books, okay, which I didn't have. So he was one of the historians. He lived around the time of Augustus, but he wrote from the beginning all the way up to his day. He wrote in 135 books. Of which, if I remember correctly, around 30 of them survive, 30, 35, whatever. But They're very interesting. If you ever read ancient history, another really big name is Herodotus. He's called the father of history, and some people call him the father of lies because what he liked more than facts was stories. And he says so very plainly. He's actually and someone has said Herodotus is good. You can open his book up at any page, and you'll probably find a good story about right there. Well, that's a little how I felt about Livy. He tells one good story after another. So it's fascinating. Where was I going with that? Yeah, as it came to Athens, when he talked about Athens, he said the Greeks used to be warlike. He's referring to Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was the inspiration for Roman generals. They wanted to be like him so badly. And as far as individual charisma and even genius, none of them ever accomplished that. Alexander the Great was in his own category, and the Romans got ahead not by through individual charisma or genius, but by organization. That was their gift. So Livy is talking about the Greeks. He says the Greeks are normally when people come anymore, they just talk to them. They don't fight them anymore. They just like to talk. There is an awful lot of talk in Athens. Anyhow. So that would have been over the time that Paul was visiting there. He's Livy was writing this several 100 kilometers away or 1,000 or whatever. So the Greeks were very important in helping to establish what we know as the Roman world when they were, and there's so much so that it's called the Greco-Roman world in many ways. And the Romans respected the Greeks, unlike other people that they conquered. They laughed at them because they cared about the fine things of life way too much. Whether it was, and your thing about art, philosophy, a lot of that, what they developed came from the earlier Greco civilization. But they still adopted it, and they used it, and Greek became a very common language all over the world. It's very interesting. When Paul wrote to, people don't think about this, but he addressed the Romans. Actually, the Romans. And there's a book like that where he talks about the Romans. Well, he means the Christians in Rome. And then, and I think in the actual book it is, he says that. But he writes it in Greek, not in Latin. That's like saying today would be like writing a letter to a church in Washington, D.C. saying to the Americans, and I'm going to write it in French. Okay?
That would be on the pen.
So it gives you an idea of how strong the Greek language was even in under the Roman rule. Okay, we're going to fill it. Do you have what you want as far as that? I have one more paper. You can just pass them around. I don't know if there's anybody who wants more. This is just for reference sake. It's a map. I love to be able to place where things are, and I'm not really good at this. This is a pretty basic map, but it's kind of Rome at its height, so it'll give an eye. We should be able to find stuff. Just take them one at a time, and eventually they'll make their way across. If you don't want it, don't take it. And if you want more, then I will hand some more out later if I need to make more copies. The story of the Roman Empire is, first of all, the story of a city. Actually, I'm going to do one other thing here first. I want to break up this whole thing. So we have 753, 476, and 1453. Okay, so what's critical in understanding Roman history, really, is that this was not one seamless whole at all. So you have a time of the kings to begin with, and then they kicked the kings out after, I think, about 10 of them, or that's in my head, that might not be right. They kicked them out, and they were very proud of the fact that they were not ruled by kings. They were ruled by elected officials. And then that period, which is a very long period, essentially, from the beginning here until Augustus, is called the Republic. Now, tomorrow I'm going to quiz you on this just a little bit. So remember, first of all, there's Republic. Now, after Augustus took over, he established what historians now refer to as the Principate. This comes from the Latin word principus, which simply means first. All right? And it's where we get our word prince and so on like that. Okay? So we think of it as empire. He's calling it, they call it the principate, and there are reasons for that, which we might get into, and maybe not. Beginning with about the time of Diocletian, in the late 3rd century, we get now into the time called the Dominate, when the focus is no longer so much on the institution or the country as a whole, but on the emperor himself. And so the emperor is a very interesting figure in all of this. But they're what we classically call an emperor extended from this time. Now we have the word empire. What is an empire?
The domain
of an emperor. Good. Good try, but not quite right.
A system with the emperor at its head, right?
Again, good try. Not quite right. Okay, that's good.
Isn't it like the lands under the emperor's control?
Okay, no. So you guys are linking emperor and empire. So get rid of that. An empire, and the reason we know this is because Athens was an empire. And there were other empires before that and all that. An empire is an institution, a body that sends out colonies. That colony then comes under the rule of the mother country, and then it feeds the country, and the mother country protects it. Mm-hmm. All right? So, like the British Empire. It will then expand, and this is called an empire. All right? Now, sometimes we do get those mixed up, and we refer to imperium, for example. That's where the thing gets confused with emperor. And imperium simply means command. And so the generals in Rome were called imperators, which is where we get the word emperor. But they weren't emperors in our sense. You get what I'm saying? Even though the same Latin word was used for them. Eventually, the only person allowed to be called imperator was the person we call the emperor. So if you understand that concept, the idea of empire actually goes back into the days of the Republic, when they were starting colonies and it was growing and expanding quite remarkably. All right? However, for sake of ease, people will often divide Roman history into two sets. Republic, I'm getting mixed up again. Republic and Empire. Again, those are kind of artificial divisions. But the idea is that once there was an emperor, and then there wasn't. So that's kind of why they divided into two. How they lost that concept of rule by the Senate to be consolidated into one person is something quite interesting, and something we'll discuss a little bit as this class journeys along. Okay, so now, to begin with, the story of Rome starts as a story of a city. And in fact, I can tell you it starts as a story of more than one city. You could say two cities, maybe three cities, maybe even four. All right, one of the cities, of course, the city, was Rome itself. But there was another city who, from a mythological purpose, and never, get this, myth plays a huge role in the establishment of a national identity. There is the American myth. There's even the Canadian myth. That's that they're better than the Americans. I'll tell you a story. I live in Canada. Canada's my home. Yeah, I do. I have a great friend who is talking to a German and Austrian, and this fella said, Americans think that America and Canada are the same thing, and I know that coming from America, and I've heard that said lots of times. Canadians know they're not. And he was saying this to a German and an Austrian. And they laughed, and yeah, it's exactly the same thing. Germans think Austria is the same as Germany. Austrians? No way. Austria is much better than Germany. All right, so this whole concept of national identity goes back to intangible, often historical realities that historians call myth. So, the myth. There is a founding myth to Rome, and I'm wondering if you know what it is. It's not Rome.
No, the two twins.
Okay, it's earlier than that. Again, I've studied some of this in college a little bit, and so this was a shock to me to find out. The Romans, so how many of you, has anyone here, are you ready to say something, John?
I've heard the twins one.
Yeah, okay. This is far before that.
Think about Romulus and...
Yeah, he's a twin. Okay.
Okay.
The great founding of Western literature, two Greek books. Can you tell me what they are?
The Iliad
and the Odyssey. Iliad is another Greek word for what we call... The Iliad was a place.
Rome?
No. Where did it take place? Troy! In Troy, there was a family who did not like it that this whole thing with Helen and Paris... And Agamemnon and Menelaus all coming together and fighting. They resisted that. And because they did not want to fight the Greeks, they were allowed to leave. But it was with great sorrow and tragedy after tragedy. The Greeks loved tragedy, and the Romans in their own way did too. A man named Aeneas left Troy. He went with his son, which was very important. His wife traveled behind. He carried his father. His son walked beside him, and his wife walked behind. She was killed. From a literary perspective, that was important because he was going to meet somebody else. And they went. They sailed away, and they ended up at Carthage, which had just been established by Queen Dido. All right. There he tells them the terrible story about what had happened and the tragic things that had happened back in Troy. All right? Including, what's the one story you all know from Troy? The wooden horse, all right? That story is not in the Iliad or the Odyssey. It's in the Aeneid or the Aeneid. All right? And then that's this story that I'm telling you now, which was written by Virgil in the time of Augustus. So, Aeneas wants to stay in Carthage, but he is reminded that he is supposed to journey on, and he ends up in the Italian peninsula, and there his son establishes a city on Alba Longa, and this is the foundation of the Latins in Rome as compared to the Etruscans or the Etruscans, right? That's the story. So from very, very long ago, so I have it in your timeline that the beginning of Rome itself, the traditional founding of Rome by Romulus, who was...
That's the traditional version, but...
I'll get right there. Coming from the Trojans and Latins with Aeneas 4 centuries earlier. So we're talking about...
Before Solon.
400 years earlier than 753 is roughly... I mean, this is in the mysterious shrouds of time. Something happened, and this is the story that they chose to tell. And so, this is very important to the Roman myth. Their national identity, that as they come back and they take over the Greek world, that the Greeks are just getting what they needed. This is all part of history revolving around again, and now the Trojans have got it. Okay? So, story, myth, those are powerful things. All right, in the story itself, Romulus and Remus are twins. They are rejected, which is a common motif in ancient stories. And... Another terrible thing that is tragic in these stories is that they're often twins and they often end up fighting each other. And that reminds you of a biblical story, doesn't it? All right, so that's fitting that same motive in there. Romulus, and it was very interesting getting there. Read the first 5 books of Livy's history. It's fascinating for the story value of nothing else and the great concepts of valor and courage that these guys exhibited, which Romans loved so much. So Romulus established a city, established a pomerium, which became the word for garden, but that's a boundary. And this is his city, and Remus had a city on... I was going to say on the other side of the river, but I'm not actually sure it was. Maybe it was just on the other side of the hill or whatever. And the concept of the city, again, is that it's very sacred. And so nobody is allowed in this sacred spot other than the one designated, and that was Romulus. Well, Remus made a joke out of that. He jumped over the wall and Romulus killed him. So this is again the story of hate and violence establishing this foundation. And so then it goes on into quite a long, but from a human perspective, interesting story about, you know, how do we get people? Well, we welcome anybody who will come in who isn't allowed to be anywhere else. So there are bandits and criminals and these kind of things, and they end up invading the Sabine territory to get their, well, actually inviting them in, and that's the famous abduction of the Sabine women story where they keep them, and then the women keep the fathers from making war on them and saying, no, let's join together. And so already in the very beginning of these early stories, the Romans glorified, you could say, naked violence as a way of achieving what you want. And virtue, an important part of virtue, is when you set your mind on a goal, you don't let anything get in the way. All right? That idea comes up. But you have to realize this is a big thing for them to figure out. How do we operate a city? And, you know, what do you do with the sewage? What do you do with houses and where things are being built and so on like that? So it's a complicated deal, but they had time and it gradually evolved into a working city. If you want to look at just a few interesting dates that are on your thing, I kind of put it in your deal. We should go back to the time of the kings. They didn't quite know how to rule each other once Romulus was gone, or Romulus. And so they invited some other local families to come in and be the king. These were the Etruscans. And they provided the line of kings until they kicked them out. And that was because of a terrible situation involving a very proud king called Tarquin Superbus. Superbus means high, right? He was the high one. And if I can say there's one lesson that you can learn from reading Livy and some of these Roman things, it's if you overreach, if you overextend, you end up losing more than what you were going to gain if you didn't reach at all. That just happens over and over again. And so through these terrible things, a man named Brutus, who had acted the role of an idiot in order to avoid getting killed as because of his family connections, all of a sudden came to his senses. It wasn't quite that simple, but... And he led the revolt against Tarquin the Proud. His name is Brutus. Get that? That's quite influential, because when his descendant, hundreds of years later, came along, who was Brutus, that was one of the things that inspired him to help plan and join in the assassination of Julius Caesar, who was one of his friends. Right? They were. That's why, and perhaps even his son. So that's why Julius Caesar, he looks at him as Brutus stabs him and says, "Et tu, Brutus, and you also, you're doing this." Brutus was the name of a king killer. And after they ejected the kings, they passed a law of legal regicide, which means that anybody wanting to be a king, it is a responsibility of the mighty men in that city to kill them. All right? So... powerful stuff. I want to mention just three things here quickly as we talk about identity. I think our time is rolling around terribly fast. Roman identity. As talking about those kings, and so what they say is the first king brought war, military. That's Romulus. He organized them, and that was one of the things that shaped them very much. So the Rome was very strong in the sense of war and military. The second king, Numa, was instrumental in getting temples built. He's the one who brought in Janus, who is the god of doors and of beginnings and endings, and the Roman god. There was no other mythology that quite has something exactly like Janus, whereas normally they borrowed for their others. He was established and was credited with establishing religion. Whoops. religion, and law. And then the third king brought organization. He organized them into centuries, which was the original hundred. That eventually lost it, that meaning of a hundred, but at the beginning it did. Have you ever wondered where the U.S. got the idea of having electoral blocks? At the time of the founding of the Constitution, the two most widely read books were the Bible and Plutarch. And the concept of Roman organization influenced the founding fathers, even that term, founding fathers, tremendously in America. It was they openly copied Roman custom, for example, adopting an eagle, using a word like senate, a capital. The Europeans looked at them and said, "You're calling that building a capital? There's only one capital, and that's Rome, the capital in Rome." There was a capital as in the head city, but the building as a capital, that was considered, "You fledgling little people, you think you guys are going to be Rome? What's wrong with you?" So those were intentional connections, again, in helping to create their own identity. Now, this is the comment I want to make. The concept of military, war, religion, law, and their organization, these are not different things. These are all part of a whole. For them, for example, to have a war and to have law, to have a war and religion were completely inseparable. There was only one way to win a war. One of them was be ready. I said there's only one way, so I'll give you two. You had to be ready for it. You had to be used, whatever. But the guys who really won are the ones that the gods helped. The Romans were very religious. Exceptionally religious. They looked at the fact that their religion, their gods, the people, and they took pride in that, that when they would come to a city, they would beseech the god of that city to leave his protection, and they will honor him much more than the ones who are in there now. All right? And by doing that, they would win over that aid. And so they very much considered the fact that you cannot win unless you have divine assistance. And if you win, you obviously do have divine assistance. So there you go. We're already at 4 o'clock. Remember this concept. War, religion, law. Not three different things. They're all together. Also, republic and empire. The difference between it, tomorrow we'll talk about the establishment of the empire and how that ended up influencing the world. Okay, you're dismissed already.